Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, AEP, on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is October 21st, 2015. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 17,168, the NASDAQ at 4840, and the S&P at 2018. This week is Estate Planning Awareness Week, and as a member of the Estate Planning Council of Lehigh Valley, I felt it was imperative that we talk about getting your estate plan in order. Tonight, we have Judith Harris, attorney with Norris McLaughlin & Marcus, on the show to talk about simple steps to help you get started. We are live tonight. We are happy to take your questions. Judy Ann is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take the information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear us without the delay and we could talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number this evening, write it down because you might have questions as we go through the hour. The number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. As I mentioned, Judith Harris is a member of Norris McLaughlin & Marcus and chair of the Pennsylvania Office Estate, Trust, and Tax Practice Group. She has over 29 years of experience in the areas of taxation, wills and trusts, and estate administration. She graduated from Bryn Mawr College and went on to American University Washington College of Law for her JD and Villanova University School of Law for her LLM in taxation. Judith's practice also includes representation of businesses, charitable trusts, and foundations, and representation of estates, trusts, and beneficiaries in disputes before the Orphans Court. Judy has served as board member of many local organizations, including the Allentown Symphony, PA Shakespeare Festival, and the Fund to Benefit Children and Youth. Welcome back to the show, Judy.
Thank you, Laurie. Delighted to be here.
Thank you for being here. Judy is, for our regular listeners, they know she's a go-to person I have for our estate shows because it's the favorite thing we love talking about, and because it's Estate Planning Awareness Week, Judy and I thought this was a very appropriate time to talk about this. We are both members of the Estate Planning Council of the Lehigh Valley. Judy served in the past as president, and I'm the current president of the council. And as part of our mission, we want to enhance estate planning awareness amongst our membership, of course, but personally, we also like to raise awareness in the community and with our clients. Judy, what I would like to do this evening is talk about trying to put this into some basic framework as to what documents folks need, how they can get ready to go see their attorney for their estate planning, how they need some awareness around knowing that beneficiary designations and asset titling is not all there is to estate planning, and a recap of some of the taxes that they may be subject to, and how working with an attorney and doing their estate planning, we may be able to help plan for some of those taxes. So I want to remind folks the phone number, which is 610-758-8810, and you can call in and talk live with us, or give your question to Judy Ann, and we'll answer it when you're off air if you're not comfortable talking on air. Of course, we love your questions, though. So let's start with the first part of the show. What are the basic documents that one needs to have and the basic purpose of each? And that might take you longer than our first break, but let's start with some basic things. And let me start also by saying, I think I just saw a statistic that it's about half of the people in the country don't have documents. Is that kind of a statistic that sounds about right?
It's entirely possible, Laurie. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, over 29 years, I've handled many, many estates. Most of them estates where clients had come to me beforehand and we produced plans that served them well. I've handled estates of clients, deceased clients, whose executors or personal representatives came to me to handle the estate. And because I didn't have the pleasure of knowing the clients then, you know, it was piecing together a puzzle. I hadn't known the person during life. I had not done the estate plan. And so they're all different kinds of estates to handle. I've handled a lot of estates for lawyers who died without wills. So, you know, and other professionals. And so everybody's different in this world. We all have busy lives. Each situation is different, and I cannot emphasize that enough. So I'm thrilled when a client decides he or she wants to embark on either creating or updating an estate plan. And I am pleased to do that, and I try to make it easy and fun, because I recognize some people don't relish the thought of contemplating their own mortality. And so I do this in baby steps. We have a process in my firm that we all like to follow, and we like to think that it makes the process interesting and satisfying for the client. That said, when a client contacts me, I talk to him or her or them and explain to them the process. I send them a questionnaire. And it's about 10 pages, and it asks for personal information about them, their families, their objectives, their team of advisors, which we like to see in most cases, because as you know, and we've worked together, one is at his or her strongest as a client when he or she has a team mm-hmm. of advisors, a financial advisor, an accountant, a lawyer. I send this questionnaire. I ask that it be completed. It includes asking the client to list his or her assets, their estimated values, how they are titled. Are they individually held? Are they jointly held? Are they held through a partnership, an LLC, a corporation, retirement plans, you know, who the beneficiaries are. This is a good time to do housekeeping. Mm-hmm. Some people don't recall who the beneficiaries are. They might have gone through a divorce or other life event that caused them to need to update this information or update knowing what the information is. The client brings the questionnaire to the meeting. We go through it carefully so I understand what's on it, and then I can see in what baskets the client's different assets are, because not all the baskets flow into the estate and are directed by the will. Some assets go directly to the beneficiaries at death. Some assets will go through a trust that the client might have created umpteen years ago. And it's this identifying the assets, their ownership, and the baskets, as I like to call them, to determine how best to draft the client's will. So the will's very important. In my view, everyone needs a will. Some people say to me, oh, I don't have very much. I don't really think I need a will. Believe me, he or she needs a will for all kinds of reasons, not the least of which is maybe upon death, it's important to file a legal action against someone or something. Maybe the person died in an accident. We need an executor. We need a legal representative for the estate so the action can go forward. So wills are very important. In this day and age when we're living longer, as you see all the time, every day of your life, it's more important than ever for a client to have a power of attorney document. Because we might become incapacitated, we're still alive, but perhaps we're no longer able to handle our financial or legal matters. Perhaps we're no longer able, either physically or mentally, to make routine or end-of-life medical decisions. All of those can be handled by the power of attorney. The end of life decisions, as you know, are covered more by the living will, and that's the third basic document I like to talk about.
Okay, we're going to recap that when we come back from our first break. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we'll continue our discussion with attorney Judy Harris from Norris McLaughlin & Marcus when we return.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Well, oh, losing my voice. Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me in the studio this evening attorney Judy Harris from Norris McLaughlin and Marcus, and we are talking about Estate Planning Awareness Week. We want to help the 50% of the people out there who don't have any estate planning done, get it done. And we have our caller from Orfield. We have Leanne. Leanne, hello, can you hear us? Hi, Leanne. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Hi. How can we help you today?
Okay. So I have often wanted to get these documents in order for myself, but the thing for me that's been intimidating is I don't know how much it would cost to actually get these documents in order. So if you could speak to what a ballpark amount to expect would be, that would be great, and I'll listen to my answer off there. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Leanne. Take care. Thanks for calling in.
Leanne, thank you. That's a very good question. And it's one I address early on in the process. As I mentioned earlier, Leanne, every situation is different. And different in terms of your objectives personally, the members of your world, so to speak, whom you want to benefit at your death, or the people you want to appoint as fiduciaries, executors, agents under power of attorney, surrogates under will, a living will, rather, trustee under trusts. And so what I have you do is I have you complete the questionnaire for me, and we meet initially. That first meeting is the most important, and by the end of that meeting I can give you a range of the cost. I'm lean and mean. I've been doing this for 29 years, so I really like to make this a short, manageable, realistic process. And by the end of that first meeting, you'll have a good sense, and I think a very reasonable sense of what's involved in terms of work, meeting your expectations, and also cost.
Okay. Judy, sometimes people want to do things on their own. Can we talk about that for a moment?
I would love to talk about that for a moment, Laurie, because in respect of National Estate Planning Month, and happy to you. We're all celebrating because we like this awareness. You know, we have a lot of technology in this world that we didn't have. I know in my world when I started practicing 29 years ago, and the internet is a wonderful tool that has made all of our lives richer and allowed us to be more aware in all kinds of ways. That's the great news. The danger is, I'm finding more and more that new clients might come to me hoping to create an estate plan, and I find out that they do have a current will, but they did it online through something they found online. And more often than not, either the document is inappropriate, it doesn't address their needs even though they thought it would, it's not mindful of the assets or the beneficiary designations involved in their planning. It does not take into account tax consequences, and it might be non-conforming with Pennsylvania state law or the law of the state in which they are domiciled. So I get chills down my spine when I hear about people doing their plans online, even the simplest of plans, knowing that a lot of people say, once again, oh, I don't have that much. You know, when I just had some dental work today. I didn't do it myself. I went to the best dentist I know, and he did a great job. So I would urge people to just have faith in their attorney to do the right plan for them to carry out their wishes.
I want to make some comments, because earlier when Judy was talking about the process that her firm goes through with the questionnaire and asking questions about the are there businesses? Who are the beneficiaries? Is there a trust? Sometimes a trust is named a beneficiary. Just in the past, you know, couple weeks, I've had situations where a client thought their daughter was the beneficiary of a life insurance, and it was her husband. And you might say, well, that's all right, because it's a husband. But the husband has children from a prior marriage, and the wife may not want the whole life insurance policy to pay to the husband when she's thinking in her mind it's to her daughter. So going through this inventory is one thing. And if you're not working with an attorney, they may not be able to alert the person who's doing the estate planning of the consequences of some of their decisions. When you name a trust a beneficiary of an IRA, there's certain language attorneys want to put in the documents to make sure that you're getting all the tax advantages. So it's not just about making sure, you know, you have a will and it says everything to my husband or my wife or my children. There's more to it than that. And the box software or the online or TV software isn't always going to, well, doesn't go through all of those iterations. My brother-in-law many years ago lived in Washington, Judy, and there's a well-known female financial advisor who sells all kinds of things on public television and apparently sells some kind of will-making thing, because he did his will through her software. He lived in Washington, and I wasn't sure it mattered, but it said it was a California will. So I said, you know, is this what you really want? There was all kinds of crazy things in that document that he didn't want. Right. So, Leanne, it's good that you go meet with someone. They'll talk to you about the fees. Attorneys are good about talking about that. I would stress that it's also really important that you do your homework and come prepared. Because one thing I'll tell clients before they go see their attorney is, you don't want to be hemming and hawing in front of the attorney either. You're paying good money. You want to make sure they're helping you with all the important and complicated issues. Not, you know, do you give the, you know, the snowblower to your brother Joe or to your cousin Jack, you know? So you want to watch for that. We had another question come in from Norm. Thank you for calling, Norm. And the question is a comment on the previous call. Could you give an actual ballpark cost? You never gave a number for the estate planning documents that Leanne had asked about.
That's an interesting question, Norm. And, you know, I would be in my view, I would be doing the listenership a disservice by citing a cost, because we attorneys, you know, involve ourselves in contracts. I would never want anyone to think I was citing a proposed fee for something. So, you know, it could be a few hundred dollars. It could be several thousand dollars. Every situation is different.
Especially if there's a trust, businesses, you know, it depends on how much planning goes into that. And I would also say that quite often people, you know, might go to an attorney who is a general practitioner. Nothing's wrong with that. But they may be doing estate documents, but may not have the same level of sophistication for certain estate planning that someone may need. So you also want to make sure that you're seeing an attorney that's right for your situation. Would you agree with me on that?
Absolutely. And it's a variation on what I said about my dentist today. And one of the beauties of being in my firm, which is I guess we're the largest firm in the Lehigh Valley with a bunch of all different areas of practice, of specialty. If my client has a copyright problem or a complicated real estate matter or securities matter, I walk down the hall and talk to one of my partners. I don't practice in every area of the law, and they don't practice in my area. You know, I do tax, estate planning, business, so...
So I hope that helped, Norm and Leanne. We're going to take our next break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Judy Harris, attorney with Norris, McLaughlin & Marcus. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Oh, we're back so fast. Folks, you're listening to Your Financial Choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have with me in the studio this evening, attorney Judy Harris from Norris, McLaughlin & Marcus. It is Estate Planning Awareness, and we are talking about just that, hoping to help folks who haven't pulled the trigger and done their estate planning. And I want to emphasize again that estate planning is not simply asset titling and beneficiary designation. It's important that you have the proper documents. And Judy had mentioned earlier the importance of a will, power of attorney, and then a living will, which I want to go back to just kind of recap that. One thing I do want to mention is that we did a show on the power of attorney update. The statute was updated in Pennsylvania, and that show was on February 4th. So for folks who have online access, you can go to wdiy.org or to yourfinancialchoices.com and search for that program February 4th on powers of attorney. And that was Judy Harris as well talking about that, knowing that powers of attorney are one of the most important documents you have. So, Judy, we talked briefly about wills, the importance of those, and that the will is, I don't know if we talked about what the will controls, so we can maybe talk about that for a minute, and coordinating that with some of the other documents. But so we have the will, you mentioned power of attorney. I didn't give you time to talk about the living will, but we know there might be trust too. If you could kind of recap and say where some of these documents might be optional. What a trust, for example.
Okay.
Not everyone might have that. So if we talk about what the will controls, what a power of attorney might take care of, what the living will does.
Okay. Well, we'll start with lifetime.
Okay.
And the power of attorney is the document of the three I mentioned that is the core of the lifetime planning. You appoint someone called an agent. In the olden days, it was called attorney. In fact, as of the year 2000, we call that person an agent. You can appoint one or more people as agent or agents, and that is the person or those are the people who are given the authority to act on your behalf with regard to financial matters. That could be anything from paying bills, hiring an accountant to do tax returns.
Gifting?
Absolutely. If the proper powers are in the power of attorney document and the law has changed, and I caution everybody in that regard. So power of attorney can be general and can give your agent pretty much any power that you have to conduct your own financial, legal, and medical life. The will, typically, as you know, the will comes into play when you die, when one dies. And in that document, among other things, you appoint an executor, a personal representative, that's the more general term. You appoint an executor, who is executors, person or people who are the legal representative for the estate after you die. They typically work in conjunction with me or an estate attorney. And I have a wonderful team we have in the firm. I tell executors who come in ashen-faced and scared to death, say, hey, listen, I know you have a day job. I know you have a career. I know you have a family. Your life is very full. We don't expect you to do all this work yourself. But if you work with us, we'll do 95% of the work, knowing you're the decision maker. You sign the documents. You make the ultimate decision. So we're here to support you. Wills also cover, they tell us where you want your tangibles, your things, your cars, your jewelry, your art collection, what have you, to go at your death, where you can make specific bequests of cash, of real estate. I try to stay away from making bequests, specific bequests of bank accounts or securities.
Right.
I like them to flow into the general residue of the estate. So you can, there are all kinds of ways you can leave general items or specific items to various people or charitable institutions for which you will get, the latter for which you will get a deduction for inheritance, if it's a qualified organization, a deduction for inheritance tax and estate tax purposes. You can also, there are also important administrative provisions in the will. Any goodwill should have a tax clause. And I know it's not a hot topic for a lot of my clients until I explain what happens if there's not a good or appropriate tax clause in a will. It tells us out of what money, where do we come up with the money to pay the inheritance tax that's due or the estate tax that's due? How do the expenses get paid? There are a lot of really important administrative provisions in a goodwill that aren't necessarily sexy. It's not anything you'd see a late-night TV show about, but they sure are important provisions in administering an estate.
Judy, I actually, if I can interrupt you, I have a caller on line one. We have Helen in Bethlehem. Helen, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hi.
How
can we help you?
Well, I'm not sure if I have the speaker on. My phone just went black on me when I went to look at it. But in any case, I have a question. I did go to an attorney, and I got a very reasonable price because I don't have, you know, a lot of stuff in the sense of all of the other things like trusts or anything. It's me, myself, and I.
Okay.
And I have possessions and such. So the question is, I filled it out. I put in all my records that I had as your guest. I apologize for forgetting her name, but she was saying how she has a first sit-down, which I did do, and then they wrote up the papers. I came in and got the signatures they sent out to various people who would be co-executors or power of attorney, etc. And yet a few people have not signed it because they thought that the written document was too vague. That if something happened to me medically, which I have some medical things down the line, that's why I want to make sure I got it done in case I become incapacitated. And they did not sign, which I agree with. You know, I asked them and questioned and said, well, this sounds like when I'm alive, people can take over my decision-making, even though I am cogent and I can think through. You're giving carte blanche control even when I'm living and fine, the way it's written. And so two people have not signed it. Is it a null will if they don't sign? Because they did not, they said, it's just a standard thing. There's no problem. It's what is the norm. And they would not redo it.
Okay, Helen, let's see what...
I have a few thoughts, Helen. First of all, it is not customary to need an executor or beneficiaries to sign your will. So let's just assume that your will was not the document of which you are speaking.
It's probably that I'm using the wrong terminology.
Not a problem. Not a problem, but I want to help answer your question.
Yeah, because I had medical, you know, to have someone take power of attorney in my stead if I was not able to, right. Some for financial, if I had, you know, and that was what was done. I'm fine with the will itself.
Okay.
It's just the fact that the verbiage was too broad,
right.
And gave them control over me while I'm still alive, okay. And kicking.
Right. Helen, I just have about a minute here, so Judy's going to try to give you some help here.
Okay, thanks, Laurie. Helen, I have two other thoughts. Number one, it is probably, I'm guessing, I am assuming in my professional judgment, the power of attorney, whether it be a general power of attorney, a financial power of attorney, or a healthcare power of attorney, of which you're speaking, it is customary to get the agents whom you appoint to sign the document. Is it fatal if you don't get the agents to sign? No, it just means that they can never sign. I mean, they can never serve. In order, when the time comes, in order for them to serve on your behalf as your agent, they do have to sign the document. But let me step back and mention one other thing. There are two basic kinds of power of attorney. And I get most of my clients, I would say 90% of them, 95% of them, want the power of attorney document to take effect right away, the date you sign it. It doesn't mean you have to relinquish control over your life. It just means if something would happen to you temporarily or permanently, tomorrow, next week, next year, next decade, those people can step in. As opposed to what we call a springing power of attorney, which takes effect only if you are determined to be incapacitated by, the way I define it in my documents, my springing documents, if your attending physician declares you to be incapacitated in writing, then your agent or agents can step in and help you. It sounds to me as though, and I'm, you know, I don't know whether your attorney talked to you about whether you wanted a springing power of attorney.
No, that was not brought up, no.
Okay.
That might be something to talk with them about then. Okay, Helen?
Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a good night. Thanks for calling. Folks, we're going to our next break. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert here on WDIY Allentown. Currently 74 degrees. The sun is down by now. Tonight, a low around 47. Tomorrow, Thursday, another pretty day, partly sunny with a high near 74. Thursday night, a 20% chance of isolated showers, low around 44 degrees. Friday, sunny with a high near 59. Friday night, a low around 34. We cool off on Friday and Saturday. Saturday's high 58 with sunshine. And Saturday night, a low around 47 degrees. Now, once again, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, John. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have with me in the studio this evening attorney Judith Harris from Norris, McLaughlin & Marcus. We are talking about estate planning. We're having some great calls tonight. We really appreciate the listeners calling in. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And I want to mention, Helen, if you have access to the internet, you can go on WDIY.org or YourFinancialChoices.com and look for the show from February 4th, 2015, where Judy and I talked about the power of attorney. And on that show, she did mention the two different kinds of power of attorney and how important it is that folks are aware of the new statute and all that is involved with that. So we were talking about a will and all the provisions you can put in a will, Judy, and how that could, that basically tells the executor what to do with the assets that are probate, that come through the will, meaning it was in the decedent's name alone. There is a power of attorney. We talked about that being lifetime. The health directives, you touched on that briefly with our last caller about there could be a power of attorney for health care, and you could do different things with that. I suppose those medical directions, the health directives. There's so many different names for those now, I think. So that's an important document that when you're working with clients and you're doing their estate planning, you're typically including that as well, are you not?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Someone walked in and said, I want a will, you're going to talk to them about, well, we're going to look at a will, a power of attorney, and...
And a living will.
And a living
and
will.
And then we talk about how they want the power of attorney to be structured. Are they appointing the same person to make financial and legal decisions as healthcare, or do they want me to split up the documents so that healthcare, both routine and end of life decisions, are in one document and financial and legal are in another? And Laurie, if I may, I didn't get to a really important part of a will. This has more to do with our younger clients, but it's so important, and that is guardianship provisions. Clients who have minor children, either under the age of 18 for personhood in Pennsylvania or under the age of 21, it's so important to have appointed a guardian of the person and a guardian of the estate. When I say guardian of the estate, I don't mean that the child has died. That's the technical term. For the guardian, you appoint to take care of the children's assets that are not otherwise held in a trust. A lot of times we build trusts in wills, as you know, because people don't want their beneficiaries to receive all the money they leave them at once. They want it held until certain ages. They want a trustee to be in the driver's seat to exercise wisdom and discretion and consider the beneficiary's needs before making distributions. So guardianship provisions are really important for our younger clients. So it's clear, God forbid something happens to the clients while their children are minors, who is going to be asked to take care of the children and the children's assets.
Okay, so Judy mentioned that there could be some trust provisions under the will. That's typically, we call that like testamentary trust provisions. And what I love about that, Judy, is when you're doing estate planning for folks, you're also helping them not just get their documents done, but you're also giving them flexibility and options. And that's what you don't always get in the online documents that people might get. They don't understand the flexibility and options that good estate planning can afford them. So, for example, folks, you might have someone, a child who's 18, and yes, they're an adult, but maybe they can't handle the money. But you're not sure if you'll always feel that way, and you want to have your document done, but you don't want to have to go change it every single year. Of course, you want to review it periodically because there's always changes in your personal situation. But an attorney can write the documents in such a flexible way that if you don't get back to that document for a few years, you can still make provisions for a child that is going to eventually be an adult and capable. So there's lots of information that people could put in a will and do in their estate planning. In fact, when people say, well, you know, you can't control it after you're gone, you're, you know, 6 feet under, you can control a ton from the grave with good estate planning documents.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So when we're talking about trust, if we can touch on this for a moment. Oh, first let me give the phone number again because we love the questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us or off air. Just give your question to Judy Ann. She'll bring it in. 610-758-8810. One document that could be optional for people might be trust. And I think that there's always these cycles of folks thinking they have to have a trust, and you know, there's these outfits that come into town for a weekend and sell a box of trust for $2,500 and never help you implement or do anything else with it. That's a little scary. You want to make sure you trust your firm and the attorney that you're working with. But trust might be a document that not everybody needs. And sometimes you get people talking at, you know, senior dinners or banquets, and someone might say, oh, I have a trust. You should get a trust. Everyone, you know, you want to get a trust because you want to avoid probate. But a trust is really, could be an optional document for people. Not everybody needs one.
Absolutely. And as you say, they can be testamentary. They can be trusts that we write into the will document. They can be freestanding trusts. I cannot emphasize enough, and I know you encounter this every day of your professional life as well, when people ask about trusts. There are many, many, many different kinds of trusts. They can be wonderful tools, and they're kind of arrows in our quiver. Depending upon what the client's or the client's family's needs are, we can suggest a certain kind of trust. Some are done to protect a spendthrift child. Some are created to achieve tax savings, to allow assets to grow tax-free outside someone's estate. They're all different kinds, and they're wonderful tools. But that's why the questionnaire is so important. When I see what a client's wealth is and what their objectives are, I can make some recommendations for them.
Okay, great. We did have a call come in off air, and it is from Shane Ming in Emmaus, and They said earlier someone brought up a springing event for a power of attorney. How often will a physician provide something in writing to show incapacitation? So, Judy, I think when we were talking about powers of attorney, you said there could be two types. One, power of attorney, where the agent can act with whether the principal has a capacity or not. Mm-hmm. And another one, their action is only brought forth if you call it the principal, is incapacitated by some measure.
Right, or some event. You know, so it's up to me as it's up to the attorney to work with the client to decide and define what that event will be. And I merely used the language I often use in documents because it's usually a doctor's opinion of incapacity which the client wants to be the trigger. So in order to answer Chen Ming's question, which is an excellent one, the answer is, you know, how often will a physician do this? I've never had a problem with it when the agent has asked the physician or I have asked the physician. I'm asking for the opinion. I'm not asking the doctor to decide something in a certain way. I'm asking the doctor to render his or her professional opinion in writing. And as with anything else in life, Laurie, there are instances where family members might not agree with what's going on, and sometimes litigation occurs. I do my best to understand the client's wishes during his or her life and to deal with them responsibly and ethically in that fashion. One can't help in some situations that families don't agree and there could be discord, leading sometimes even to litigation over these kinds of things.
You know, which is another reason why when you're meeting with your attorney, you talk through who is going to be the power of attorney or the executor, because one child might be great as an executor but may not be the person who's making those health decisions. I've had clients who say, this one won't pull the plug. So, you know, they have to have those discussions with the attorney. And sometimes parents don't want one child to feel bad if they're not, you know, appointed in some capacity. But, you know, it's estate planning for the person, you know, for you as an individual. So you just have to make sure you're working with your attorney to make the best decisions for you, and then subsequently who you're appointing is going to follow through with your wishes, of course, because that's what they're charged with, interpreting your wishes. And that's why the attorneys can help define that as much as humanly possible at the moment. Folks, if you have questions, we still have time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So we talked about wills. Can we go to, for a moment, quite often I hear people saying, oh, maybe I don't need a will because everything's going to my spouse, which is incorrect. Or they might say, I have everything in joint names, or I have beneficiary designations on everything. I thought you made a great point earlier when you said you still want a will, because what if there is some tragic event that the family is forced into a lawsuit? It would be imperative that they have a will and an executor to take that action forward. There are probably other instances as well where it's not just necessarily a tragic event. What other kind of situations might you see that come up that the beneficiary designations or the asset titling isn't going to cover it?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Well, they're happy events, too. I've had clients be surprised by inheritances that they've received from other family members or friends. And they are assets that were left to the people I know, to the client, in their name, which meant that at their death, it would pass through their will. So if one doesn't, you know, create an estate plan that's tailored to the kinds of assets one owns, and that can change. That's why we update our plans. You could have a situation where the intestacy laws might, if you don't have a will and you die, every state has intestacy laws, as you know, that direct assets that would ordinarily pass through your will, if you had one, through your estate, to certain people based on who's in your world. Do you have a spouse? Do you have children? Do you have living parents? And the statute dictates who gets what. So there are other events. You know, in the olden days, we didn't have as many options as far as putting someone's name as a what we call TOD, transfer on death, or POD, payable on death, on a bank account or a brokerage account. In the olden days, you didn't have those choices. They just passed through your will at death if they weren't in joint names with your spouse or someone else. So I don't like being blindsided, and often it's the financial advisor or a friend or a neighbor who makes a suggestion, and it might be an appropriate suggestion to add a beneficiary, but it's really important to talk to the attorney too. So we're all working together as a team.
Right, right.
No surprises that way.
Because, too, one of the things that happens on certain IRAs or even life insurance policies, if there's a beneficiary named that has maybe predeceased, it could end up going back to the estate. So there's another reason. Folks, this is our last break. If you have questions, we have a few minutes left. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. I have in the studio with me this evening attorney Judy Harris from Norris McLaughlin and Marcus, and we are talking about estate planning because it is Estate Planning Awareness Week, and about half the people in the country don't have estate planning documents. We're talking about wills, powers of attorney, living wills, or your advanced health directives, things like that. Folks, it makes sense to get them. You will benefit from getting them done. You will be happy. I always tell clients, it's when you do it that you have nothing to worry about. It's all the folks who don't do it. We have a caller on line one. We have Carol from Hellertown. Carol, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how can we help you?
Well, I wondered what you would say the considerations are that are different for someone like me who is single, has no children, and I do have a will, and I have made beneficiary designations, but that's about as far as I've gotten. Are there other things that I need to pay attention to? I also do have power of attorney, but I should be changing that because that person does not live near here any longer.
Okay. Excellent questions. And these are situations, Carol, I'm seeing more and more frequently in our lives. And, you know, for a variety of reasons, some of which is we're living longer. We have more options in our lives and how we lead them. So I'm glad to hear you have documents in place. I might suggest the following items. One is, I would pay special attention to whom you appoint as fiduciaries. Executor, I'd always make sure I have at least a primary executor and then an alternate, at least one alternate, maybe more, if the primary cannot serve.
Okay.
Because if we run out of possibilities, the statute in Pennsylvania will dictate how we choose the next executor, and it's beyond the scope of this program, but it might not bring the result or the person you would want to handle your estate.
Okay.
With regard to powers of attorney, I'd think carefully as to whether you want to split up the medical decision-making from the financial and legal. Because financial and legal, you know, if somebody lives out of town, it's probably easier for somebody to do that than to make medical decisions.
Right.
And you're allowed to appoint several people, either at once or in succession. And my power of attorney documents, because my clients want me to write them this way, in most cases give the agent the ability to delegate certain responsibilities to other advisors or people, so you have a team. The agent is still legally liable for all that goes on, but you know, it takes a village sometimes, and we recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll make one more comment. PA inheritance tax is not on your side, and I wish I could tell you otherwise, but the rate of PA inheritance tax is 0% for anything you leave to a spouse, meaning exempt, 4.5% for anything you leave to descendants, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, 12% for anything you leave to siblings, brothers, sisters, and 15% for anything you leave to anyone else. Those are whopping percentages. And well, here's the fun part. If they're charities you like a great deal and want to leave some of your estate, I can usually, because I'm a tax lawyer, this is where it gets fun. Laurie's smiling too. She thinks so too. This is where we can sit down with you and have your cake and eat it too. We can say, Carol, tell us about whom you want to appoint as beneficiaries, and we can come up probably with a configuration of people and charities that will lower your estate's effective inheritance tax rate. You'll be able to benefit all of them, but by including charities, we can actually lower the effective rate of tax.
Okay.
And it's important too, Carol, then, to coordinate your estate planning documents with any beneficiary designations that you might have as well. Because from the tax side, if there's money you want to leave to individuals and money you want to leave to charity, there are certain assets that we would suggest or have you consider going to the charity in lieu of your individual beneficiary, such as taxable retirement accounts, because charities don't pay income tax either. So it can paint a pretty picture. It's good to kind of map it all out.
Well, you're giving me information I did not know before. That sounds pretty darn significant, so I really appreciate that.
Okay, well, we hope that helps, and we have prior shows that you can go listen to if you want more information as well, and you, of course, can always call Judy at Norris McLaughlin Marcus as well, and we'll give that information at the end of the show.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in, Carol. I appreciate
it. You're welcome.
Thanks. We have a caller on line two, John, if you can open up the line. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg.
Hi.
Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. She's my favorite caller.
Oh,
good.
This is a really great show. Thank you so much, both of you.
How can we help you tonight?
I'm wondering, once you get all your documents set, how hard is it to just tweak them a little bit as time goes on? And I'm thinking mostly of, at least in my case, items that I might want to pass on to nieces and nephews, like family heirloom type things, that, you know, decisions might change over the years. How hard is that to change?
Carolyn, that's a wonderful question, and I'm very glad you asked it.
Thank you.
It's something we have not covered, so that's why you asked it. In this day and age, with computers and what have you, and we retain your documents on our system, you know, changes can be made fairly simply, provided were not speaking of a document such as an irrevocable trust that you can't change. But to answer your question about tangible personal property, we lawyers sometimes call that personality, not personality, but personality. There are several ways to handle that in your estate and your will. And I give the clients the following option. We can list items in your will, in the document. I want the grandfather clock from my mother's side of the family to go to my daughter or my grandnephew or what have you. And, you know, some people have very long lists that they include in the will, which is fine. And you know that when you die and your will is probated in the courthouse, it becomes a public document that everybody can look up. Mm-hmm. Some people find it more advantageous because they have so many things. They collect art, they collect what have you, cuckoo clocks or what have you. They'd prefer to list certain items in a private memorandum. And I always have this discussion with clients at the first meeting so they can visualize this choice they have. We are not trying to beat tax or do anything by having a private memorandum. Most of my clients want me to write in the will that they leave certain items to their spouse, but they also intend to leave a private memorandum identifying certain items they want to go to other people. And I make it clear in the will that that private memorandum is not legally binding, so it does not rise to the level of a codicil or another document that's incorporated into the will. But you say in the document, I realize this memorandum is not legally binding, but I hope the suggestions in it will be carried out. In 29 years of practice, I will tell you, I have rarely, if ever, had even the most litigious of families question moms or dads or aunties' memorandum. It's a very compelling document. I give the client a format and have him or her write it out in hand. So you can have the best of both worlds. You can have a general clause in your will about who gets what. You can refer to a memorandum that you might change every week of your life. And as long as you give me an original or a copy of that latest memorandum, we're in good shape.
Oh, that is terrific.
That is terrific.
And I think it takes a little of the pressure off of, I got to get this all exactly right, you know, before I finish getting all the documents
right
in order. So, oh, terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carolyn. Thanks
okay,
for calling.
Bye-bye.
Have a good night. Thanks. Folks, we're coming up on, we just have like a couple minutes left, and there was so much more we wanted to talk about. One of the things I had wanted to touch base on was what types of taxes that people need to be aware of. Maybe we could just fire off some of those kinds of taxes, Judy. We're not going to be able to talk about the impact of them, but I'm thinking maybe we could do another show, maybe in January, talking about just the kind of estate taxes that people have to be aware of. But let's talk about what different kinds those are.
Thank you. Very, very important. And should be part of any discussion regarding estate planning. In Pennsylvania, we have an inheritance tax, and it applies on assets that one leaves to other people at death. In most cases, there's a need to file a return, even if there's no tax due. For instance, if you leave everything to your spouse. Since 1995, leaving assets to your spouse is a tax PA inheritance taxable, tax-free event. There's also a federal estate tax in our world, and at the moment it does not produce a tax if you die with under $5.43 million worth of assets. So that eliminates many people in our world, but there are a lot of people who are over that amount and or think they might be at death, and we do certain things to plan for that. It's important to notice that there is always income tax. We always think about federal income tax and PA or state income tax in the jurisdiction in which you are domiciled, where you live and where you consider your home. I read an article today that talked about how, you know, the $5.43 million federal estate and gift tax exemption it's the highest it's ever been in my career. And I hope it stays, but we'll see. I don't have a crystal ball, so I can't predict that. But I hear many commentators say that income tax is the new tax we have to focus on, because you and I can kind of surmise that that's not going to stay the same. So that gives us more of a planning opportunity with our clients to find ways legitimately to keep, you know, minimize income tax. I'm also concerned about the federal gift tax. That works in conjunction with the federal estate tax I talked about. It has a broader implication to all of our clients who might transfer wealth to others during their lives. And we also even look at things like realty transfer tax when clients want to put real estate in trust or give it to someone else.
Okay, so we're going to have to bring you back for a show in January where we're going to talk just about the taxes and the fun.
During tax season.
During tax season, sure. Judy, how do people reach you?
They can reach me by email. That's probably the easiest. jharris@nmmlaw.com, jharris@nmmlaw.com, or our firm's phone number, 610-391-1800. And I'm proud to say that we, in April, we returned to, we're in downtown Allentown. We also have an office in Manhattan, in New York City. Partners and associates of ours are there. And in Bridgewater, New Jersey, near Somerville.
And lots of resources. Judy, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And hopefully her calendar will be free in January. We'll bring her back. We'll talk more about estate taxes. Next week, I have Matt Petrozelli, COO of Valley National Financial Advisors, who will join me to discuss what's new in managing your investment account. What kind of bells and whistles are there? Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. I want to thank John for being here, Judy Harris, and Judy Ann Harris answering the phones. Thanks, folks. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.
NPR News is next, and then In the Tradition.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. After weeks of consulting with friends and family members, Vice President Joe Biden is opting to stay out of the race for president in 2016. NPR's Tamara Keith reports Biden says he's